The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. I know we're sitting here watching the market collapse in front of us. So that's the word you want to use. I actually came in early on Thursday to record, and the Dow was down well over 1,000 points, started to rally back as I left the office to head in because I had obligations for the next couple of nights, in fact. But yeah, I want everyone to know that we have been here before, not exactly under the same circumstances because we've never been there before, where you have a Fed that's been so accommodative for so long. And like previous years and shows, I talked about how stimulus was like a drug. And to get a bigger reaction, you had to give yourself more and more of that drug. Well, what that was, low interest rates, massive spending, massive stimulus. Well, that has now started to come to an end. So we're going to have Rod to come on and talk a little bit about where we are on things today, what you should be doing, and certainly what you should not be doing, which once again, folks, I know you're sitting there thinking, oh, is another financial advisor saying me to keep my feet to the fire? No, I'm not telling you that. I mean, we have been talking for the last 6-7 months about strategies, right, to as an alternative to taking on a ton of risk, maybe alternative to fixed income. I'm actually meeting with a client today that I looked at an email. It was on the 9th of January, and the email was, hey, I'm looking at taking some long-term bonds off the table and looking at replacing that with some structured ETFs, some buffer ETFs. And they wrote back, we'd like to learn more about that strategy. Can we come in and see you sometime, maybe in, you know, a few weeks? Well, yeah, that's okay. So I sent them that information to chew on before we got together. And now here we are in May having that meeting. And I'm thinking, okay, they're going to be coming in. And I'm like, hey, we're too late. Because interest rates have jumped significantly, bonds have declined significantly. If you think the stock market's down, which it is, the S&P, you know, down, I mean, just depending on what day you look at it, right? Let's just call it 10%, even though it's not necessarily 10. And you look at the Dow, where it's down, and the NASDAQ certainly down, you know, maybe even 20%. But what about the 30-year bond? The 30-year treasury is down like 30%. Who would have ever thought the most, quote, safest investments you have would be down? And that's the dagger that's been affecting your statement. So we're going to talk you through this, tell you what to do and what not to do. More importantly, what not to do when you're experiencing this kind of volatility. And then really what to expect as far as the future goes. And again, coming back to the purpose of my money, when do I need it, for what purpose, and that's how and what should drive my investment decisions. So we're going to have a good show today, I promise you that. Thanks for letting me off last week. I was actually in a conference. I was at the 2020 financial conference that I was to attend that was booted to 21 and then to 22. So I had to go, right? Plus it was in Maui of all places. So we packed up. My family went with me, and me and about 300 other people were there. I told my wife, typically when I'm gone more than 7 days, I feel like something always is going on. Like, and I just feel uneasy about being gone. But I had to try to stay super connected while I was out, you know, talking with different people, doing some research, you know, talking to our home office, which is here, about what's going on, phone calls that we were taking, concerns that folks had. And once again, you just have to go back to the principles that you laid out when you made your plan. And if those principles are still in place, sure, you might want to make a tweak or two, but you don't want to make wholesale changes when things are just out of sorts. So looking again, forward to having Rod on in just a few minutes. We'll also talk about later in the show, the House did pass that Secure 2.01 bill back at the end of March. I did talk about that on the show briefly, But what were some of the important pieces of that House bill, and what should we expect from that going forward? And I will be in Kansas City next week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at my Ed Slot study group. They call it the IRA, Elite IRA Advisor Group. There's about 500 of us. I'm on Ed's board, of course, part of his founding group, that there's about 40 of us left as far as that founding group goes from well over a decade ago, maybe 20 years. I have no idea. I think I was 30 or 31. So, yeah, close to 20 years. And, so they like me there for the new, the orientation of the new members that are coming in, which they have to go through a pretty rigorous process to get invited to become part of the group. So it'll be fun for me, but I'm really excited about digging into some of the stuff that's happening out in Washington and how it will affect you, and how I can bring that information back and tell you, okay, here's the things to keep an eye on that are probably going to happen, and here are the things that are out there that probably won't. And that's what I've been able to, over the years, do for the listeners of the show. And one comes to mind, qualified charitable distributions. I remember every year for a long time, it was passed in January, retroactive as an extender until they made it permanent a few years ago. So we would know that from our conversations with my group, and we would encourage people to still give money after 70 and a half from your IRA, called a qualified charitable distribution. It's not taxable to you. It also satisfies part or all of your minimum distributions. Do it, do it, do it. And then January, lo and behold, they would say, yep, passed it. It's the extender, and it is retroactive for the year before. So those are the kind of cool things that we learn when we are together, part of Ed's group. So again, I'll be bringing back all kinds of good stuff from that meeting. But we'll be recording next week's show a little early so that I can get out of town on Wednesday. But once again, trying to stay super connected. So let's give a little shout out to our sponsors of normally News in the Week. But since we're going to be talking so much news with Hot Rod here in a few minutes, decide to skip that segment as a formality. And some of the things we're going to talk about, you're going to really want to listen to. And then some of the things, again, that we want you to do, and more importantly, not do, are going to be the themes of today's show. But thanks to Lance Lyke at the Lyke Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with that proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300. And I'll tell you what, I've had 3 phone calls in the last week of people that have been told to get their affairs in order. Well, one of them is in hospice. He cannot speak. And if you didn't already have your house in order by then, it's kind of too late. So thankfully, we did some work and some heavy lifting about 3 years ago, and I reassured his spouse that all of the heavy lifting was done. Your affairs are in order. Just take the time you need with your husband. And that was it. You know, that was the message. But then there was another one that said, yeah, I never got around to getting back to the attorney, right, to get the power of attorney, to get the healthcare rep, get all that done. So, yeah, give yourself and your family, trust me, and your family, not yourself, your family, the peace of mind that comes with that proper estate planning. And this is probably not a wonderful segue, but Kenny Bland Auctions, because they will offer the pre-planning of your estate, a sale of your estate or real estate. So visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And finally, Unrivaled Electric, we are getting into storm season. They want to be your electrician. Like they are mine, they specialize in generators and solar arrays, veteran-owned. They are awesome. 812-361-3604. Of course, find them on Facebook as well. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, not just the largest rate hike since 2000, but a lot of other things going on. When we come back, we're going to take a long, it's going to be a long segment, just to prepare yourself. It could be 15, 20 minutes by itself, which could encompass nearly half the show. But we'll try to shorten it up and get on to the second part of the show as well, because I think it's just as important that we get into all of the topics of the day. Let's take a quick one. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Joining me now, live on the radio, is Rod Holloway, of course, the equity portfolio manager and our branch manager at CFCI. And of course, we talk a lot every single day. Had a chance to speak with Rod a bunch today in preparation for today's program. But Rod, I was looking back at the Wall Street Journal, because I came back into town and had my Wall Street Journal, which I had already read on the road, from April 23rd and 24th, the weekend journal. I had this past weekend, April 30th through May 1st, and then I picked up the Wall Street Journal today on Thursday, and it starts off the one from a few weeks ago, earnings, rate worries hit stocks, and we see the NASDAQ, Dow, everything down. Then the next weekend, NASDAQ caps worst month since 2008, down 13% in the month of April alone. And then finally, today, Fed rate rise is the biggest since 2000 and plan to shrink their portfolio, kicks inflation fight into high gear. And of course stocks actually went up that day on some reassurance that they're not going to do anything more than what they've said they're going to do. And we'll get into a lot of that discussion because stocks in the markets move on expectations, and usually they overshoot and they always get oversold and then they adjust on reality. But Rob, we are sitting in some pretty historic areas right now because there's a lot of things that have happened in the first 4 months that really have never happened in our careers and certainly our even in our lifetime in some situations, right? You gave me four bullet points from a trustworthy group that we follow some, and I thought, man, you've got to be kidding me. We're off to a four-month start that's the worst since in the S&P since 1939. Are you kidding me? I mean, there's just some pretty eye-opening points that you made to me this morning and got me thinking as we wanted to share some perspective to people today on the show.
Yeah, most certainly. It has been a very interesting market. I think coming into the year, we had discussed quite a bit that we expected a lot of volatility this year because as the Fed begins to remove the punch bowl and increase interest rates and start their quantitative tightening, we knew that the market was going to have some short-term negative reactions to that. I don't think that we ever expected the kind of volatility that we have seen up to this point, especially when you look, as you just alluded to, that yesterday the market had an extremely strong, powerful rally because the market had started to price in a 50 basis point increase this month, which they did do, but 75 in June, 75 in July, and also on the quantitative easing or tightening side of things, the market had started to think that they were going to accelerate the time horizon, and right now they're letting about $45 billion run off of their balance sheet get that up to about $95 billion by September. The market had started assuming that was probably going to jump to about $95 billion in June. So they are not tightening as fast, and Powell said, no, it's not even up for discussion right now of doing those types of things. So the market has a strong, powerful rally. But one day later, absolutely nothing changed overnight from what the market heard out of Powell yesterday. And one day later, you have a massive sell-off giving everything back you got yesterday off of that. So volatility is here. It's here to stay. It isn't going to just suddenly go away. I don't think today's sell-off is a signal of anything that we didn't already know. We already knew that this was going to be a hard battle for the Fed to win because of the lag effect of things kicking in with the actions that they take. In addition, many of the economic data points that they look at are really lagging. So you and I spoke about that a little bit this morning, that you begin to see these things before they show up in the national data points that get released. So we've already had a pretty good move or reaction to the first 25 basis point increase, and it hasn't even fully had its effect, and we just had another 50. Now, I'm not saying another 50 as though that was wrong and it shouldn't have happened. They should be raising rates. I think where the conundrum comes in, they should have started sooner so that maybe they wouldn't be in the boat that they're in which they're grappling with how fast do they go, because I think that's the component that is most unsettling to the market, not that the Fed is raising rates and participating in the quantitative tightening with their balance sheet, but more so the pace at which they're doing that is where the market gets concerned.
You know, and we said early on that we did not believe this inflation would be totally transitory because of the rise in prices, and obviously that could subside, but the wage increases, and that's not going to go anywhere until there's another contraction and you get a few layoffs and you have, that's the way this thing works. Real quickly, Rod, back to 2000, when they said that's the biggest rate hike since 2000. Of course, that was the end of the tech bubble when it burst. And back then, and I guess what I'm trying to say to people is, why is this time different? Well, this time, I'm not saying we don't have some bubbles and a few assets here and there caused by tons of stimulus, tons of money in the system. But back in 2000, I mean, literally, that was the exuberance that the Fed chairman at that time talked about. And when they started raising rates, of course, went in that massive recession from 2000 through the end of 2002. And I just believe this time is different than that. And just like it was different than 08. When 2008 hit, we were in a credit crisis. So people talk about, why did they start raising rates in 2008? Well, that was to kind of slow down the craziness that was happening in real estate at the time. Well, that was more of a credit crisis than it was an interest rate move. And that's what I think is happening now, which makes this maybe a little bit normal, even though it's happening so quick, so fast. And that leads me to the bond prices. You know, the last time we saw declines in bond prices like we've seen, it was in 08, because there was a credit crisis, which meant that people were worried that literally an AT&T and again, no recommendation to buy or sell AT&T, but a big, well-known, established companies that, hey, they may have trouble paying their bills. When McDonald's is reporting in 08 that they may not be able to make payroll because their money market funds were being chalked up, that's a real credit crisis. The reason bond prices have fallen so much is that interest rates have gone up. And when we talk about bond prices, that's what we say generally drives them. Yes, credit spreads, meaning, you know, how comfortable they are that people can pay the bonds off. But interest rates, that's always been the primary driver of bond prices. And we've been in a 40-plus year decline in interest rates that have made the bond market look really, really good. And now we have flipped course pretty quickly. And here we sit with bond values, in some cases, substantially lower than their stock values are.
Yeah, most certainly. And I think that's one of the things that is making this a little unsettling in the short run. You go back and you look at 2000. One, that bubble burst because you had a driving force behind the rise in the equity market was a whole bunch of companies that weren't profitable and didn't even tell you that they were going to be profitable in the near future. So that was kind of a junk rally as far as, let's go buy things because they have .com in their name, whether they're profitable or not. Now, we have some individual companies that look like that now, and boy, are they getting rocked in this environment. But we have far more companies that are extremely profitable. Earnings have been very good. The last time I looked at the data, 75% of the S&P 500 companies that had reported had beat earnings and estimates on average by 9%. So that's a far cry from that 2000 side of things. But the 2000 side, you didn't have a big blow up in the bond world. So you had some insulation for the investor who had a balanced portfolio. The equity side may have been down, but the bond side held in there. In 08, everything went down because, as you alluded to, it was a credit crisis. And credit crises most certainly can be far worse because they can drag on far longer because the financial world has its hands and fingers in almost every component of the economy. So if there is trouble within the financial world, it spells trouble for all avenues of the economy, versus that back there was more tech-specific. You hear a lot of talk about tech now, mainly because tech has been the hot sector. It's also the one that will struggle in a rising interest rate environment. But as I keep telling people, not all techs are created equal. The ones that are going to struggle the most in increasing interest rates are the smaller, more aggressive growth ones, just because it costs more to pursue that growth. So they have to make the decision, do we pay for the extra cost to pursue this growth, or do we not, because they don't want to squeeze their margins down. But some of your larger, more mature tech, they have the kind of cash flow. They don't have to tap into the capital markets. The people from the financial department determine, where's the best way to get capital? Do we take it out of cash flow? Do we issue bonds? Do we go to our banks and we borrow? But yes, to your point, it is a little bit different as far as the bonds and the stocks are down right now. That's different than 2000. What's different than 08, in which both were down, there was serious systemic risk that some of those bonds were going to completely implode and go away. We don't really have that here. Now, I'm not saying there are no companies that are going to go under. I'm talking more investment grade, your AAA, your AA, your single A type bonds. We don't have that kind of stress in the system that these companies are in danger of going out of business. It's really a simple fact of interest rates have gone up. I can buy a new bond, same credit quality with a higher interest rate. So I'm going to pay a discount if I'm going to buy an existing bond that is out there, because I can go buy it brand new for a higher rate. So the only way I'm going to buy your bond off of you because you want to sell it is if you sell it to me at a discount. That's why those bond rates are down. So right now it is not a signal of stress of rising defaults within the credit system.
Yeah, it's almost like if I could make 4% on a 30-year bond, or I am currently getting 3%, and you buy four, think about that, earning 1% more for 30 years, that's why your 30-year bond is getting absolutely rocked like we've never seen it happen before. We're going to take a quick break, Rod. I want to come back and talk about the things people should be doing, but most importantly, not be doing, because when we look at this market right now, it's natural behavior to want to run to the doors. And we have been here before. Rod and I have been at this since the early 90s. We have been through a lot. I went through this the other day with someone, not just the now in the news again, the Russian bond default of 1998. People had forgotten all about that. I said, yeah, I was here during that. Yes, I was here during the tech bubble. I was here during 9/11. I was here during the great financial crisis. I was here during the pandemic of 2020. And I am here now during the temper tantrum that's going on in the bond market and the stock market as the Fed's starting to raise rates at a historical fashion. So we're going to take a quick break. What do you need to do? And more importantly, what should you not do? When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Yeah, when you think about it, the worst four-month start in the with the S&P since 1939, inflation hitting 8.5% in March, maybe a little higher going into April, highest in 40 years. And this is one that was kind of shocking to me, Rod, and I didn't have time to verify this, but this came, the source on this is Westwood Group. Again, a reputable group of people that send stuff out. I mean, we said they had to have gotten this through compliance to get it to us, but I usually like to trust but verify. But 2022 so far has been the worst total return for the 10-year Treasury since 1788, just before George Washington's presidency. You and I were like, did we even have Treasury debt back then? And I'm like, well, I guess so. But I'm going to trust and verify that. But that's shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, most certainly was, and to the point you have mentioned a few of those bullet points on there, and they're all pretty surprising. You know, yeah, we knew that we got off to a weak start this year, but it didn't feel like it was historic. But I think part of it comes down to, you know, these are the months in which the market tends to do well. You know, we just hit May and the sell in May and go away, which not that we're a proponent of that or encourage that, but that's usually for the end of May. You know, January, February, March, and April are usually pretty solid months. So to come out and be weak and consistently weak, you know, you're down the month of January, you're down the month of February, you did have a positive month in March, and you got off to a decent start in April. I think the first 2 days I was talking with Glass, I think it was the first 2 days were positive and looked like we were going to carry that March trend on, and then boom, that reversed and completely went away. Here we are in early May, we've had a couple of up days, and now we got a big down day off of that. So yeah, it is quite unusual, and you throw on top of it that bonds were down as well. And I think to the point that you were making as we went into break of what we wanted to discuss here, I think the biggest thing is that people have to avoid doing, don't make a decision off of emotion. Don't allow fear and panic to cause you to jump in and do a decision that doesn't make sense long term. Now, we've said many a times that you don't really know your true risk tolerance until you hit an environment like this. So if what you're finding out is that you don't like the risk as much as you thought you did before this sell-off, then by all means, you should begin making adjustments, but make slow adjustments. Don't just jump in and go, I'm getting out of equity completely, and then attempt to rebuild, because you will not feel comfortable rebuilding that equity portfolio until the market has already had a very strong rally, and you miss a lot of that rally before you feel comfortable going back in. Plus, usually the market has very violent, quick moves when it has these big rallies or big sell-offs. So a big bulk of it happens in a matter of a day or two. Well, it's extremely hard to get in or out before those types of events. So the best thing is to develop the right long-term allocation. If you don't need your equity dollars for the appropriate time horizon, which should be a long ways out, then there's no reason to panic because they're down right now. You look at your portfolio, hopefully you own quality stocks and you feel comfortable that, hey, these companies, they're going to be around for the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, so you don't need to worry about that. If there's dollars you need in the very near future, hopefully those were already set aside in something much safer, much more conservative than individual stocks, so that when the time comes that you need them, you're not selling assets down, because that's the other thing. When you sell down, you now have fewer assets exposed to the recovery, which makes it even harder to recover. You've already done the numbers in the last month a couple of times, I believe, on your show, Dave, as far as, you know, if you're down 50%, you don't just need to get 50% back to get even. You need closer to that 100% to get back to even in that regard. Well, if you sold assets down 50%, you're going to need more than that because you now have fewer dollars working in that recovery to get back for you. So if you have figured out that your asset allocation is off for your long-term risk tolerance, then, yeah, you want to sell into some of these rallies minimally. But you want to develop a plan that makes sense, that was determined by calmer heads, by less emotion. Now, whether that is talking to your advisor or talking to your spouse or whoever it is that is the more calming effect for you, have that conversation and develop a plan off of calm, sound decisions, not panic because you looked up at the board or you looked at your statement at the end of 1 month and said, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. I've got to get out.
Right. And it's emotional. We understand. I would say this to people often, that when it comes to family and our money, those are the two most emotional things we deal with. So those are the things not to do, Rod, not to make a knee-jerk reaction, jump out now, but certainly recognize, hey, I don't like that. But here's the problem. Human nature says we have this recency bias, and we've had several years here of really great returns, and we just got comfortable with that. But we, hopefully on this show, had said, listen, you know, you're taking on risk to get there, and what goes up will usually come down, and you have to believe that over the long term that this will come back, and it will. I mean, we've given folks that kind of confidence in the past, and if we continue down this road, we're going to likely, you know, be in a bear market for a bit. And when you talk about bear markets and the recovery, we know that the last one only took a few months to come out of. Typically they're longer than that, you know, it takes 9 months to 24 months to come through one. But we always have. Go back and look at the charts. In fact, I'd encourage you to go back and look at where your values were 2 years ago and where they are today. And had you went to bed and you just woke up and looked at the statements, would you still be okay with it? My answer is you would be, because I know you would be. But when you look at where you were in, let's say, last October, November, and you're looking at where you are today, you're probably feeling a little anxious. So like Rod said, don't make silly decisions now, don't make knee-jerk reactions. But Rod, what can people do now in a positive fashion to, you know, to get through this, besides just not doing something stupid?
Right, yeah. Well, there are a lot of great opportunities now. You know, people were talking for the last couple of years. You had a lot of people that kept coming on saying, gosh, a lot of these stocks seem to be slightly overvalued as they just continued to go up month after month. Some of those stocks are now much cheaper now. So there are great opportunities with great quality companies. The biggest thing is, similar to don't panic on the fear side, don't get ultra aggressive. Don't get greedy. Don't go taking a whole bunch of money and dumping it in into some of these stocks that you thought, gosh, I didn't think I'd ever be able to buy this stock at this price again, and here it is. Okay, great. Ease your way in, because while we see that there are some real good opportunities within the market and much better valuations and price-to-earnings multiples on those companies, it doesn't mean you're going to reap those rewards tomorrow or next week or next month. An oversold market can become even more oversold, as we saw with an overbought market here in the last couple of years that continued to become more overbought. So don't just jump in. But yeah, boy, if you got dollars on the sidelines, this is an excellent opportunity to start buying. And don't wait to be a buyer until you feel extremely comfortable that the market is fixed. because at that point
in time,
you've already had a big chunk of the rally. It's already passed you. So that's why you just ease into it. You don't take all of the dollars that you have available to allocate and put them all at once. You just start slowly buying, and you look, and whether you're a buyer of mutual funds or ETFs or individual securities, you just start easing yourself back in. I know that's what I've been doing. You know, here over the last few weeks, I'll go look at my portfolio. I'll look at the cash that I have available to invest, and I'll just pick one or two stocks, and I'll go in and I'll nibble on them.
Well, and Rod,
I think big full positions.
Yeah, and I think you're making a point as a portfolio manager. You have the knowledge to do that. I think most people, you have to align yourself with good portfolio managers, a good mutual fund, a good manager. That can do that for you. You send them the money. So what you can do is keep investing. Don't say, oh my gosh, I'm going to quit investing. Or even like Rod said, front load contributions. Maybe you can front load your 401k at work. Maybe you have some cash in the bank. We went through the last 2 years and everyone talking about how much money is in the bank. Put some of it to work. Do a Roth conversion. Look at your account and say, listen, that fund is down. That stock is down. Your advisor should be able to reach out to you and say, hey, here's a great opportunity. Let's move this over. We did that in a big way back in 2020, down 20%. Hey, we want to keep this stock. In fact, we might want to buy more. Shift it over to the Roth. Bang. Let it sit there. When it recovers, it's all tax-free. Maybe even within the Roth. Buy more of it, like you said. But I would align yourself with a good manager to not only do it for you, but take that emotion out from you making another silly decision. So, Rod, as always, appreciate it very much. I'm actually recording this show early, like I said, so I'll be seeing you back at the ranch here in about 30 minutes.
That sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break when we come back, shifting gears a little bit. And I guess I want to say one more thing. You know, I'm going to wait. When we come back, I'm going to talk about how do you figure out what you need to have to retire and the process that your mind needs to go through and hopefully make it simple to understand. But I want to get to the different strategies that you create income in retirement. Okay, we'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, have you been able to catch up on all the podcasts? I think we have 15 or 16 in the can now, so go binge listen to them each and every week. I've just come up with a little different topic. This week, I'm thinking that I'm going to talk about tax-free bonds, and are they really, truly tax-free? So look forward to that episode coming up next Monday, as I'm going to record that this evening, because I'm a little behind in my recording with being out of town. Of course, we replayed last week's show, or the week before show, last week, because no one was around to do the heavy lifting. So here we are back live in the studio, sharing with you our thoughts, and again, hopefully some calmness and perspective, as we try to always do. So one thing I want to mention when it comes to retirement, think about Mount Everest. You know, people who do that kind of thing, they climb, right? So think of your 401k and accumulate. Then you get to the top, you're like, I made it. And then you're like, now I got to get down. Well, that's the distribution phase of retirement. That's when the rubber meets the road, when you have to have a real strong, firm strategy to get you down to the bottom of the hill without dying. Because if you look it up, the people don't die climbing Mount Everest generally. It's on their descent, on coming down. So think of your retirement the same way. Accumulate. You know, that's actually the easy part. And like I was saying in the last segment, this is a real opportunity to accumulate more. Take advantage of things when people are nervous and scared. That's Warren Buffett's philosophy and has been for years. But when I talk about how do you figure out what you need for retirement, here's how I've always looked at this. I always look at it from a bottoms-up approach. Now, what does that mean? I say, well, how much money do you bring in now each and every month? And if you have a paycheck like a lot of people, maybe you have some bonuses, you can get pretty darn close. And then you say, okay, how much of that do we think we need in retirement? And it's okay to say all of it. But then like, okay, what else are we going to have to pay for that we don't currently pay for? What are some things that we won't have to pay for? Like maybe a house. Maybe you've been helping your kids with their student loans. Or whatever, but you add and subtract, and you kind of come up with a really good number. And one of the things you're going to have to add is, let's say, healthcare costs, Medicare costs. Maybe you want to worry about paying for long-term care at some point. So you have to take this all into consideration. But that's my bottom number, my net number. Too many people, I think, focus on the top number. They'll say, well, currently I'm bringing home $100,000, and I've been told I have to bring home 80% of my pre-retirement income, so I need 80 grand. Where's that all going to come from, right? So I say forget that. I mean, that's okay to maybe give you some sort of a beacon of where you need to go, but I like to get down to the tax, brass tacks, and say this is what I need. Now, on top of that, then I'm going to need to pay some taxes. So based on that number that I want to replace, add in taxes, right? And then I start subtracting my sources of income. Do I have some rental income? Do I have Social Security? Do I have a pension? Whatever it might be. Start reducing that out and then say, okay, here is my income that I need for my investments. It could be $2,000. It could be $5,000. Doesn't make any difference. And then you say, okay, how do I do this? How do I avoid not dying on this descent, right, from the peak of Mount Everest to the bottom? How do I avoid dying? And that's where you come up with a really good plan. So the bucket plan is something we promoted forever because interest rates have been so low. I used to promote income for income, growth for growth, but when you could buy interest-bearing investments paying 4, 4.5, and dividends were 2 to 3%, you could more easily just have enough money to provide you the income from just income, right, and let the growth grow. Well, then when you get into an environment where interest rates are low, stocks have climbed, so dividends have declined, you have to come up with a different plan. So you have to move into what's called the annuitization method or the bucket plan. So the bucket plan has been very, very powerful for several years, and that is to build the first 10 to 15 years of your income in a fixed investment. It could be a fixed annuity. It could be a laddered bond portfolio, whatever. And then the rest of your money is your later money to grow. And as you pull down your soon bucket to zero, your later bucket grows, giving it plenty of time. And again, 10-year time horizon, 15 time horizon. Those are good amount of years to be assured that you'll have positive outcome in that later bucket. And you refill as you go, you know, sweep and keep, and you have some strategy there. But as interest rates go up, I can foresee us moving into more of an income for income approach once again. So here we sit 20 years doing this radio show, and I can tell you that we're going to continue to talk about different strategies to make sure you don't retire in a bad market and lose all of your money, or lose your money to excessive taxes, or lose your money to inflation. How do you hedge those things? Like I've said in prior shows, you need to own things. You need to own things that appreciate when you have inflation. So there are those strategies, but here's the difficult thing for me to convey to people right now. Let's say you went the fixed annuity route for your soon bucket. You're not worried because the fixed annuity is not going to move up and down in value based on where interest rates are. When you bought that sucker, you got locked into whatever it was that you got locked into. Now, you may have said at the time, I don't want to be locked into something, even though it practically made sense that it's okay to kind of be, when I say locked in, you're not locked in. It's just if you want to get out early, there's some kind of a penalty for getting out early. Or so I decide I want to build a laddered bond portfolio. What does that mean? Well, I want to retire in 2022. So 5 years ago, I bought a bond that matured in 2022 to have the money I need for retirement. And then I had one maturing in 2023, 2024, all the way out for the first 10 years of retirement into the year 2033. Well, those bonds that are 10 years out, 12, 13, 14 years out, 15 years out, now the values are down 6, 7, 8, 9%. And you're thinking, wait a second, that's my safe money. It is your safe money. But right now, the bond values are down because rates are up. So it doesn't feel like your safe money. But if you own quality, like Rod mentioned, just hang on, because with interest coming in and with the maturity getting closer, it will sort of backfill its way right back to what you wanted it to do in the first place. The issue we've had is because rates have declined so much during 2020, practically going to zero, right? The 10-year was around 0.6% or something like that. It's now over 3. Well, when it went down that much, the values went up dramatically. We were seeing bonds up the same way, up 7, 8, 9, 10%. And at the time, if you were a person that we work with, I would say, you know what, that looks good, but don't get too excited about that because it can easily go the other way. Our intention is not to capitalize on that, because what are we going to do with the money now? But we're going to ride this thing out, continue to have it for the purpose that we built it for originally. So that is the only flaw in the bucket system, is that it's not contractual. It is contractual, but it's not, quote, fixed like an insurance contract would be. So I could see us sort of moving or transitioning back into the annuity for that early bucket, maybe into some annuitization, which is where you put money with the insurance company. They give you some kind of a guaranteed income or pension. So just, I feel the transition happening to less bucketing, more of income for income, maybe more into annuitization. And if that happens, it happens. But you have to be ready to pivot when those times come. So that's what I wanted to share with you today. How do you fill the income gap? What's the right method to do that? And where are we today on these different strategies? And if you read my book, 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win, there's an entire section on this. When it comes to sequence risk, I go through annuitization. I go through bucketing. I go through income for income. I go through all of the different methods for creating retirement income so you make it to the top of Mount Everest, but you don't die on the way down. So if you wanted to listen to one of the podcasts, I think I cover it in one of those as well. I think around number 5 or 6. But if you start with number 1 and go to 15, I promise you'll catch it on the way up, not down. Let's take a quick break. Come back and wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Not much time left in the show. I actually had another segment on the House passing the Secure 2.0 bill, but it's not law yet. A great piece that came out of my Ed Slot group that I wanted to share, the important pieces of that House bill. And I am not going to have time to do that, but I'll tell you that it's making things confusing once again. And that's okay, because when there's confusion, there's opportunity. Now, I'm going to say some of it makes no sense to me at all. Some of it makes perfectly good sense, like increasing catch-up opportunities. You know, I was with someone today who, it's like, yeah, I know at this point in your life at 57, you probably feel like you're behind. But listen, you are making a ton of money right now. Your kids are getting ready to get out of school. And guess what? For the next 7 to 10 years, you're going to be able to sock away an ungodly amount of money. And I did a podcast on basically, hey, your time will come. And that piece is important for people to listen to who don't think that they're where they're supposed to be, but will be able to play some catch up. And if you're given the opportunity to put more money in once you hit these certain ages and stages of life, that's a fantastic idea to get people retirement ready and making sure they have all they need to prepare for retirement. But yeah, there's all the RMD stuff we talked about, qualified charitable distribution stuff is in there as well. They're going to index that for inflation potentially. Currently, you can give up to $100,000 a year per person. That may start getting indexed like some other things in our tax code, which, interesting, not everything is, but some things are. I think I did a podcast on that as well. With employers being able to offer better plans that are to more people, which get more people an opportunity to save for retirement, savers credits being increased, all kinds of cool things in the bill, but then there's some goofy things as well. So next week I'll be at my Ed Slot Elite IRA Advisor Group meeting. Very excited. First one in person in a couple of years over in Kansas City. So hopefully markets react okay while I'm gone, although it doesn't really matter because, like I said before, the strategies and things we have in place are confident in, and Rod will not be with me. Eric will not be with me. All the guys back at the shop that watch this every day, as we are the architects, they are the builders and the maintenance guys. That's the way I described it to a new employee today who doesn't know anything about investing, and it kind of like made sense to her, right? We design it, they build it, they maintain it, right? And we kind of help communicate what's been going on throughout the process. So, hey, have a great week, and happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to my wife, my stepmother Jeannie, my mom, Rhea, and all the great mothers out there. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.